You are listening to KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend. And welcome to Book Lovers Cafe. Book Lovers Cafe is a program of author interviews and book reviews with a local perspective. And I'm your host, Chris Wilson. Today, I'm really excited to be welcoming Bonnie J. Ruff to the microphone here. I'm talking to her on the phone. And she is an author and a parent and a researcher. She does all kinds of talks. She lives in Seattle, and she does have a connection with Port Townsend because she is married to a man that graduated from Port Townsend High School. So we have to put that in. So welcome, Bonnie.
Thank you so much for having me, Chris.
Well, Bonnie's book is called Beyond Birds and Bees, Bringing Home a New Message to Our Kids About Sex, Love, and Equality. We're just going to refer to it as Beyond Birds and Bees, but I think that the added description is really important for everybody to know. Let's begin with talking about the event or idea that began this journey to write a completely different book about sex and raising young children.
Great, yeah. So my family is an American family. I married, by the way, Dan Ruff, who, yes, graduated from Port Townsend High School and is known for his basketball accomplishments, so in case any of your listeners are wondering. And we were living in Minneapolis in 2009 with, at the time, just our first child, a little girl, when Dan's job brought us an opportunity to move to the Netherlands. So we moved to Amsterdam when our daughter was just about 2 years old. And so in a way, we were still really new parents, right? And anybody who's had kids can probably remember that time when you're looking around, watching what the other moms and dads and nannies and grandparents are doing, trying to pick up hints about how to do this child-rearing thing. So for me and Dan, that shift happened in a new place. So suddenly our examples around us were mostly Dutch families. And we noticed, you know, kind of everyday things, like, you know, maybe the snacks and the preschool lunches were a little different.
And everybody's on a bicycle without a helmet.
Yes, everybody's on a bicycle without a helmet. Can you imagine? And so, yeah, we definitely had some things we needed to learn about. The logic there was, according to our bike shop clerk, that if too many people are wearing helmets, then the motorists will feel they have to be less careful. Can you imagine? So that, you know, right away we're getting the idea that there's a different logic here to what it means to be happy, healthy, safe, and sound. And so as we were settling in, there were other things we noticed, too, especially that were jumping out at me, although I didn't quite see yet how important these things were going to be. But I saw that Dutch parents and families were much more comfortable, for example, with nudity. So at the local wading pool in the park, kids would swim naked in the summer. And I don't only mean toddlers. Kids might have been, you know, elementary age and still stripped down to their underwear or all the way on the way home from school for a little splash. Families were really comfortable, too, just even at home from what I understood. Just maybe they might shower together. The pool locker room where our family went to swim on Sundays was an all-genders locker room. There were private changing stalls, but you didn't get to, you know, decide anything about the gender of the person who might be in the stall next to you. So there was this general comfort with nudity and the body, and it showed up, too, you know, in the preschool teacher's approach to changing diapers and teaching the children how to use the toilet. They were using accurate body terminology for everything, including children's genitals. They weren't shielding boys and girls from each other. They all shared the same bathroom and might see each other's body parts, and that was really treated as if it were a very normal and normalized part of life. So I saw all these things happening and kind of actually started to experience something in myself. I was different, too, when I lived in Amsterdam. I felt this kind of unexpected comfort in my body that I hadn't really experienced at all in my adult life as a woman living in the U.S. I just felt more at home and more comfortable in my own skin than really I had since childhood. at the time, I didn't piece together that there was going to be a link that I'd be able to see eventually between those approaches that parents and teachers had. Of course, speaking of teachers, sex ed started in school in the Netherlands for kindergartners, which meant age four there.
Mm-hmm.
That there would be a link between those approaches and why I felt more accepted and worthy and comfortable just as I was in day-to-day life in my neighborhood and in civic life, too. So those things kind of came home to me later when we moved back to the U.S. after having lived in the Netherlands for a year and a half. We gave birth to another child, or I gave birth. We had another daughter. And once she was born, something just kind of got just stuck in my craw a little bit. I was noticing how, seeing for the first time in a lot of ways, how here in the U.S. we have more of a tendency to offer boys and girls really different things and experiences from a very young age, whether that's clothes or sports or toys mm-hmm. or books or subjects.
I just want to interject here that was also, you know, we were aware of that 30, 40 years ago when we were raising our kids too, and we tried so hard. And then it only seems to have gotten worse with, mm-hmm. you know, the pink princess phenomena and the, you know, all the superheroes. So I don't know. It we tried.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I don't know whether it, you know, it just didn't work. And sex education as well.
Yeah.
There was a big push for sex education in the 70s, and then there was this big pushback culturally. You know, the culture wars began, and we wanted to shield all the kids and
right.
and the teenagers from yeah. experimenting at all. Anyway, keep going. Let's talk about, once again, you know, going back to Amsterdam. I wanted you to tell the story of going and visiting the museum, the Nemo Museum.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So we had been living back home in the U.S. Mm-hmm. for a while. I'd been having some nightmares trying to, you know, I was just really grappling with how do we raise kids in a society that sort of positions boys and girls and men and women as adversaries or competitors for power instead of as allies and, you know, united to build a better society.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was puzzling over that stuff. And yet in between those little nightmares, I was having these flashes back to that wonderful feeling I had had in the Netherlands of being at home and belonging in my body as a woman in this society. That's when I learned that in the Netherlands they enjoy some of the highest gender equality in the world. So the most recent United Nations Gender Inequality Index places the Netherlands a third from the best for gender equality. In the U.S., we don't even crack the top 40.
Mm-hmm.
So I learned that, and then I started to think about, well, okay, I want that feeling that I had for my kids. All kids should have that. Every person should have that. So what's going on there? I wanted to go and take a closer look at what exactly Dutch parents and educators and healthcare professionals and in the wider culture, what were they doing to get that great gender equality outcome. So finally, when my kids were a little older, Dan and I took them back to the Netherlands for an extended stay. And one of the places that we visited while we were there is basically the Science Museum. So your listeners will be familiar with something like, you know, the Marine Science Center in Port Townsend or the Pacific Science Center in Seattle. Lots of cities have these wonderful family-friendly facilities that cover, you know, many aspects of the sciences in a fun and engaging way. Well, at Nemo in Amsterdam, they have the same thing. A lot of this, you know, similar exhibits, physics and hydropower and kinetics, all that good stuff. But they also have an exhibit called Teen Facts. And this is a permanent exhibit that is devoted to puberty and human sexuality. And anyone can walk in there and learn about the changes of puberty, differences between bodies. They can watch a big video up on the projected on the wall. It's a cartoon about a girl and a boy. You kind of walk into this, you know, made up X-ray time machine at the age of 7, and this bar rises in between them as they get all the way to 16. And in this X-ray machine, you get to see these kids go through the changes of puberty and admittedly kind of a, you know, funny, dramatic way.
I'd love to see that.
Oh, you can. Fun. I can tell you how to find it on YouTube, but you could Google or go to YouTube and search for growing pains and NEMO, N-E-M-O. And it is really, I sat down and watched it with some 8-year-old boy whose mom was over reading a display about acne, I think. But yeah, I mean, there's some pretty crazy stuff in there. I took a selfie of myself with right behind me this tank of glowing white viscous fluid that was meant to represent, believe it or not, a lifetime's production of semen. 53 liters is the estimate for how much that, you know, it's like, you know, check it out, kids. So yeah, it really was so striking. But then I realized, well, here I am, I'm a married cis American mom of 2 kids, and I kind of, like, I'm blushing a little bit. I did very poorly on this this quiz about what's my level of sexual assertiveness. And the little on-screen game show host laughed and pointed at me. And I'm thinking, here I am, you know, and I just spent a whole afternoon learning all new sex facts from an exhibit designed for children. Mm-hmm. And these Dutch families all around me are perfectly comfortable. Nobody's, you know, laughing. They're sort of just as bored as they are upstairs in the, you know, electricity exhibit or something like that, to be honest. You know, they're not too struck by it, or definitely not offended or taken aback, clutching the pearls. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so that was a huge moment of realization, and this gets back to your first question about where this book came from. Right then I realized, well, normalizing our human body experiences, everything from the time we're children and, you know, stick our hand down between our legs when the babysitter's changing the diaper, all the way up to, you know, when we're adults and choosing whether and how to have families and how to enjoy and appreciate our bodies along the way. If we normalize all of those experiences and make them everyday things so that they're not funny, they're not embarrassing or humiliating, they're not secret or shameful, the outcome can be that we have better sexual health. The Netherlands has extraordinary statistics compared to the U.S. And then we can also enjoy a greater sense of just sort of fellow feeling for our peers, no matter what sex or gender they identify with, about what their body experiences might be like and how important it is to be tolerant and inclusive of all of those experiences and how that adds up to a better society for all of us.
Mm-hmm. Well, most of us as parents, you know, we kind of gird ourselves and prepare ourselves for the talk, you know, about the reproductive facts. And over the last few generations, we've moved that back. So we don't wait until puberty. We kind of start at around 5 when the first questions begin. But this book is so encouraging to talk more than just about the reproductive facts. What else is it important for parents to engage with their children about? And it's not just one conversation, right?
Exactly. It's not just one conversation. It's one, hopefully, that our children will never remember the beginning of, because it's something we've been talking to them about all their lives, just like we've been reminding them to eat their vegetables and put on a hat before they spend too long in the sun. They'll never remember the first time we told them that either. I love your word encouraging, because that was the experience I had when I decided that I wanted to write a book about the connection between how the Dutch approach to sex ed empowers young people to build greater gender equality and also hold on to their health and safety and opportunities. One of the things that I learned is that I could stop being afraid. This is something from expert after expert. I could stop being afraid that there was some risk that if I told my child too much, I might damage them. Mm-hmm. As long as my intentions were, you know, coming from the right place, which is to educate and nurture and encourage, then that wasn't a real risk. It was an imagined risk. And same with that idea that I think so many of us just have, because it's intuitive that, well, yikes, if we tell kids about sex, then they're going to have sex. Well, young people do, usually, in our country and in the Netherlands, between the ages of 17 and 18, become sexually active. However, it's not because we informed them about human sexuality. And in fact, there's some evidence that the more they know, the more comprehensive their sexuality education is, the longer they may wait, because they're looking for a higher quality, healthy, balanced, respectful relationship, which is back to your question about what else parents and teachers and influencers over young people's lives should be talking about, aside from just how reproduction works, the names for body parts. You know, that's the biological or medical side of sex ed, but that's not comprehensive sexuality education. When we're doing a holistic job of talking to young people about sex, we're also talking about getting to know yourself, understanding your body, owning your pleasure and your discomfort, recognizing that, knowing where your boundaries are, understanding that other people have boundaries that may not be the same as yours, and that they're obligated to respect your boundaries, and vice versa, you're obligated to respect theirs, recognizing the hallmarks of a healthy friendship, learning how to make decisions on your own and together with someone else, what to do with emotions and, you know, cognitive issues like, you know, when you're feeling doubt and you're not exactly sure what you want.
Mm-hmm.
So there's so much more.
There's the
intellectual side of what it means to be a human being and to have sexuality as part of, you know, the human experience, as well as the body side and connecting with other people too in relationships. So all of those things come together in a more holistic and kind of sexuality education that matches up better with what the Dutch are doing from the time their kids are really little.
You're listening to Book Lovers Cafe, and today we're talking to Bonnie J. Ruff. We're talking about her book, Beyond Birds and Bees, and we'll also be reviewing The Girls Alone and Carrier, Untangling the Danger in My DNA. This is KPTZ 91.9, and let's get back to Bonnie. So, Bonnie, you've outlined sort of many, many conversations that we should be having with our children from the first moment they start kind of looking at your body, their parents' bodies, and other kids' bodies. And we have these fears built around that. So one of the things that you found out or were talking to a preschool teacher, I believe, in Amsterdam, were that they had rules in preschool for playing doctor. So I'd like all our audience to know about that conversation.
Yeah, this was such a thrill for me. I mean, this is the kind of book that every writer dreams of, the opportunity to write a book where the research is just feeding directly into your own life and serving you and your kids in wonderful new ways day to day. And that was this chapter about playing doctor really just, it was full of rewards in the making. So when I was working on this chapter, my youngest was 4 or 5 years old, and she was just at that age when, you know, on a play date, the kids, you know, you find out, you go around the corner and find out that they, you know, pulled their pants down and showed their rear ends to each other or something like that. And there was something about that moment where I knew that the everyday, you know, kind of relied upon old, you know, standing American advice is to tell them to stop that immediately, and that it's not safe and it's not all right to do that with your friends.
Mm-hmm.
And that those parts are private. So that makes sense, and that can be a perfectly reasonable response. But there was something in my gut that was telling me, I don't want to give that message to my daughter because I don't know how to deliver it without telling her in the same, and I don't know if it was, would be with my tone or just with the message itself, that what she's doing is shameful, mm-hmm. that her body invites trouble, that there's danger in what she's perceiving as pleasure, that there's something different about, this body part than that body part, when in fact maybe me as an adult, you know, I'm the one assigning that moral value to different body parts. I just wasn't at home with kind of the standard approach to that. So I was lucky enough to be on my way on a research trip to the Netherlands, where I was able to sit down with someone, Elsbeth Reitsma, who's been an incredible resource for me. She works for a foundation called Rutgers, and she's one of the main curriculum authors for the most popular K-12 Dutch comprehensive sexuality education curricula. So I asked her about this, and she said, oh, you know, we have a name for that. It's Dr. Despelen, just like it is for us playing doctor. And we have rules for that game. She passed me a pamphlet across the table. So here I am, you know, going, you're kidding me. You don't just say, no, you can't do that. You don't just distract the kids. You know, let's go make cookies.
Right. Don't show your private parts.
No, yeah. So she turns open the pamphlet and shows me, nope, the rules are rule number one, everyone has to agree to the game. Everyone has to agree. It's a nice idea to play, okay? Consent, right?
Mm-hmm.
Rule number two, you may do no pain. So nobody can get hurt in this game. That's not okay. And third, nothing goes into any orifices.
Mm-hmm.
So here you have these incredible three rules, and I'm thinking, wait, so it's not forbidden. You're just giving them a framework, and you're also giving them a foundation for future rules for sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
It's meant to be pleasurable. It's meant to be mutual. It's meant to be consented. And so and then she says to me, well, now keep in mind, the rules for playing doctor at school might be different. Here I almost fall out of my chair. Wait, you can play doctor at school? She says, well, yeah, but the teachers might say you have to keep your underpants on or something like that. So, I mean, for me, this was just so, it was so thrilling,
mm-hmm.
because I was hearing a message I could tell my daughter that would reinforce for her the joy and wonder and healthfulness of having and exploring and enjoying your body and learning to do that safely with someone else.
Mm-hmm.
Children's ideas about what feels good and games they play with their bodies aren't the same as the eroticism we experience in a more kind of emotionally connected way as adults. That's something else helpful that I learned. So, mm-hmm. you know, I think as adults, we look at their games and actually eroticize them more than the children themselves are doing.
Mm-hmm.
But still, I realized here in an American context, I was going to need to add a fourth rule. I told my daughter when I let her know the rules, which she absolutely loved and held on to real tight. The fourth rule is you need to make sure that your friend asks their family if they have the same rules, because not all families do have the same rules. So
mm-hmm.
those are our four rules for playing doctor, and so far, all is well.
You know, as I've been listening to you, I've been thinking more about this, and those rules aren't bad for any kind of play.
Isn't that true?
Really, you know, the whole idea of consent and talking to your friends about what they want to do and listening, really great. So another question that I think one of your daughters asked you is, what is lovemaking? And I was curious how old she was and how you framed that answer, because it would be different at different ages.
Yeah, great question. So something that was happening for us as a family is that, you know, we live in a little cozy house, and my main workspace is our kitchen table. So if you can imagine, I have these kids who are growing up from lower elementary. Now my kids are in second and sixth grades. But over the years, they've been able to see piled up on the kitchen table my books and articles I'm reading, my marked up drafts, notes all over. And, you know, they were learning to read. They're trying out their skills. And so we definitely had moments where we had to explain things that maybe we wouldn't have otherwise thought to broach at the time. But yeah, I thought it was such an interesting moment with the word lovemaking, because we teach children about, we might teach them the words sex or intercourse for something like, you know, in the context of reproduction, mm-hmm. baby making, that kind of thing. But lovemaking is different. And it gets at that bigger definition of what is sex? What is human sexuality about? Is it just about making babies? I don't think so. Most of the time, ideally, not. And so it was a neat chance for me to remind my children, since they already knew, and I would say it must have been a new reader, maybe a first grader at the table at that moment. So for my kids, that meant they already knew the mechanics of human reproduction and that all living things reproduce. And so it was an opportunity to add that sex isn't just and baby making or deciding to have sex even if you're not going to make a baby, because we also understand that that's a choice as well.
Mm-hmm.
May have to do with making a connection, being in love with someone, expressing your feelings of love for someone else, and that it's mutual and that it can be done for pleasure and for fun. So it was a great opportunity to remind them of the social emotional side of human sexuality, which is really, you know, the vast majority of our experience as sexual beings, right? I mean, so little of it is, you know, actual moments with our bodies. A lot more is with our minds and our conversations, our hearts and our imaginations even. So it was just a chance to broaden the conversation mm-hmm. out to feelings and relationships.
Mm-hmm. And that's the part that we often don't talk about at all. Hopefully it's demonstrated within the family, but you know, maybe not.
Yeah.
So another question I have is, okay, I understand that it's really important to expand sex education in our schools and in our families, but I don't understand how that builds gender equality. But you make that connection in your book.
Yeah, that was, and that kind of came home to me as I was working on this book, because I thought I was working on something maybe a little more day-to-day practical, and I was. But eventually, when I realized that there was a link between the social skills that young Dutch people or people being educated in the Netherlands are learning about how to conduct themselves in society, what their mutual agreements are going to be with their friends and classmates about how we talk about bodies, if we talk about bodies, what's what it looks like and sounds like to be respectful and inclusive. All of those things, I realized, are adding up to that great feeling that I had living in the Netherlands, that experience of walking around and knowing that you belong and that you have something to offer and that your gender is not playing heavily into what people are thinking or their willingness to be, you know, generous and accepting of you when they look at you.
Mm-hmm.
So I was able to take a look especially at K-12 comprehensive sexuality education and what those lessons teach. And I saw that they match up with some things that we here in the U.S. that our CDC says help reduce the risk of perpetration of sexual violence, which is obviously a very important part of gender equality, is making sure that people are safe going around in society, physically safe. So those are skills that are taught in CSE curricula, such as just empathy, breaking down gender stereotypes. I mean, I can see in the curriculum example that I was looking at in the Netherlands, and now we have a couple of similar really good examples here in the U.S. that mm-hmm. are available for K-12, where they're systematically showing children as young as kindergarten and first grade what gender stereotypes they hold already that have been formed. And then they're working on breaking those down. Okay, so you think this is what a mm-hmm. boy is. You think this is what a girl is. So then let's look at this picture that shows us different kinds of toys. Which ones can the boy have? Which ones can the girl have? Now, why can't the girl have that toy?
Okay.
Why can't the boy play with that toy? So they're really working specifically on breaking down gender stereotypes. And then they're also teaching how to make decisions. Again, this is back to the CDC. How to make decisions together with another person and use reason. Especially where egalitarian mindsets are inculcated from an early age, we see higher gender equality.
Yay.
In society.
We have been talking to Bonnie J. Ruff, and she is the author of a new book, Beyond Birds and Bees, and it's bringing a new message to our kids about sex, love, and equality. We didn't have time to talk to Bonnie about her other books, but she is an award-winning author. She brings challenging topics to light and breaks them open both personally and in today's culture. So one of her books is called Carrier, and it's a personal book about untangling the danger in her own DNA, and also a book called The Girls Alone about how her great-great-grandmother was killed under siege in Estonia when the Russians were attacking. And both of these are really powerful stories. So I encourage you to find books by Bonnie J. Ruff, at our local bookstores and libraries. And join me next time to talk more about books and authors. I'm your host, Chris Wilson. And you can listen to past shows, or if you didn't hear all of this show, catch it on our podcast page at kptz.org. Thank you for all the volunteers and supporters who make this station possible. I am